This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 33 for Thursday, November 19th, 2009. Add it up. That's added up. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for Out of Line After Hours at the iTunes store. Here we are, Out of Line After Hours, another Thursday night. My favorite part of the week, one of my favorite parts of the week, and one of the things that makes it a favorite part of the week for me is joined, as always, by the auto extremist, Peter DeLorenzo. Peter, great as always having you here.
John, good to be here.
And let's talk about a little bit about the rant that you did this week. I mean, you went off on the smart car, which may not be so smart, right?
Well, yeah, you know, they've run into the natural progression. You know, when they launched it, I figured I gave them 12 months. And now we're going, what, about 19 months in now. And it's, you know, everyone who wanted one got one. And now what's going to happen? They don't have a new smart on the drawing board, not even close. So, you know, we might see it go away, or it might just keep trundling along.
See what happens. We should talk more about that in a moment. I gave it 24 months myself. 2 years. I said 2 years, and that's it. Because that was about their track record in Europe, too. David Welch, who's normally with us here every Thursday night, is not here tonight. Business Week magazine is kind of imploding. It's been bought by Bloomberg, and David's got some meeting in New York. He couldn't be here tonight. And so, instead, we've got two other people sitting in with us, Gene Halliday from Ad Age. And a lot of you will know Gene because you've seen her on Out of Line Detroit before. But, Gene, great having you here on After Hours. Since we got you, we're going to have to be talking advertising. And because we've got another guy sitting in with us tonight, David Kiley, who also knows a whole lot about advertising. So I think I see a theme here building, especially with Peter having spent most of his career in the advertising end of the business. But
I feel like one thing I would like to just say about David Welch, who's a friend of mine and a former colleague, that while Business Week is going through its issues, it is going to be rechristened Bloomberg Business Week. And I can tell you, even though there's a lot of headlines about staff cuts, David is not one of them. He is going forward as the Detroit bureau chief for the magazine. So,
good.
Talked to him about 20 minutes ago. So,
cool. So, what are you doing these days?
I left Business Week and I'm freelancing, but I'm also doing some work with a firm in Ann Arbor, Icon Creative, and I'm doing brand content counseling with companies, talking to them and sort of helping them figure out what they put online as far as web content these days. Social media strategy and that sort of thing. So it's a hot area. I decided to, you know, that while I wish everybody well at Business Week, the sale of the magazine didn't fit with what I wanted to do. And the one area of advertising that's very rich and robust, I got to say, web content and social media. So there's a lot of stuff going on out there.
There is. But I want to get back to Peter a minute and pick up where we left off about smart, because it's not working. I mean, it's collapsing in front of our eyes.
Well, you know, there are a couple of things about smart. First of all, it had a fatal flaw in the transmission.
Yeah.
I mean, it just drove...
It's abysmal.
Terribly. The envelope it occupied on the road, it really didn't deliver gangbuster mileage.
No.
And the first on the block people, when they were buying them, you know, they were fully loaded. And when you fully loaded a Smart, I mean, if you step back for a minute and look down the street at the Honda store, you could get a Honda Fit for damn near the same money. And you know, it was a much, much more substantial car. Right. So now Dieter and the Daimler boys are doing this rental program, that they're trying in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm.
This is like Zipcar,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, where you just use it as you need it.
They have it in Europe, too, similar. Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, something, I don't know what it is about Daimler, the way they go about things. They say they're going to do 200 cars. Really? You really want to start that program in Austin with 200 cars, maybe 50? Let's kind of build up to it now. Big announcement, we're going to do 200 cars.
I think they would have worked in New York. Or L.A., mm-hmm. or maybe even San Francisco. I've been to Austin. I mean, I know what kind of town that is. You're right. A 50 starter would have been the right
number. Well, yeah, Austin, you know, is one of the green centers of the universe, and their city government is really, you know, aggressively pushing in green, and they think this is going to cut down urban congestion and everything. But like you say, if you've been to Austin, 200 smart cars, I mean, come on, maybe 50, maybe.
Right. When they came in, I have to say, I didn't think there was a business case unless they put a powertrain in there that got where you could put a headline of 55 miles per gallon. Because I just, as you say, with the footprint and the envelope of that car, the only rational reason would be to have bragging rights that you could drive something that had 55 miles and under 20 grand, you know, 55 mpg. You didn't even come close to that. And so you just, I always wonder what the heck's going on in the room. You know, who are the people and what are they thinking when they put that business case together?
Well, you know, Roger Penske is one of the guys in this business. But I think it was kind of, I think it got sideways because basically Daimler couldn't provide the cars at a price point that was really gonna, you know, if they were all $99.99 and got 50 miles per gallon, and even if you loaded it up, it was 12, maybe.
Right. If you could, but, or even, I'll even give you this: if you could have driven away a really well-equipped smart, you know, for 15 grand, and it got 50 miles to the gallon, and you could do 15, you know, 15 for 50 kind of headline that would grab the cult. Okay, but they got really swayed. I'll tell you what swayed them when they brought the Canadian cars in and they started doing tours, right? And they put them at the Boston and New York marathons, and they saw the big crowds that would come around. And I remember talking to people; they were really seduced by all that interest that they saw.
Well, it's, you know, you look at the car and you go, "Wow, what is that? I got to go check this thing out." And there was such a buzz when they announced that it was coming to this country, and when it finally hit the shores here. But to your point, Peter, the transmission destroys any joy in driving that car. It doesn't handle badly. I think it handles rather well.
No, I think it
rides poorly.
Yeah.
So you put those two things together, and wow, it's just terrible.
It's too small, too. I mean, I test drove it with someone from Smart in the car, and I said, well, where do I put my purse? There wasn't even any place to stick it. And so if you have more than one friend, you're kind of up the creek. But I like the four for four would be good. The four-seater would have been good, better for this market. When you see them on the four for four, isn't that what it's called?
No, it's 4-2 here.
But they did have
a four-seater,
they had a sports car.
A little bigger.
And they didn't sell in Europe either. That's why they didn't bring it here.
And they don't have a new 4-4 even close.
That's too bad.
Well, you brought up Roger Penske. I mean, this hasn't been the best spate of business decisions that he's made lately, right? You know, here's Smart that looks like it's cratering in front of our eyes. He had this deal to buy Saturn and was going to get cars from Renault and blew up.
Yeah, I still think all the work they did was all valid. It's just that.
Oh, yeah, I agree. But then I got to mention the third thing. He's tied in with ex-Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, given him a ton of money.
When I read the story, I'm like, it was Penske, Karmanos, and somebody else, I think, gave him. And I'm thinking, of all the things, if you had $350,000, let's make a list of all the wonderful things we could do with $350,000. And Roger Penske, who I respect and who decides that the best thing he can do with that money is give it to Kwame Kilpatrick? I mean, it's beyond the pale. Who can understand something like that?
Well, it was clear the business leaders of this community got together and said, we have to make a change now. And Karmanos led it. And he said, I'm sure it was just like, what can we do here?
Right.
Oh, you know, and they gave this guy a
they gave him an out.
An out.
And the out was, here's a bunch of money.
Here's a
And you're gonna do your time. You're gonna get out of town. Time. Get out of here.
Did they really think he was going to hang around and continue to make trouble if they didn't give him a ticket out of town to Dallas?
Because his whole thing is, what else do I have? If I walk away from this job, I got nothing. So I'm not walking away from this job.
But he went to jail. I mean, he was gone.
But well, this was this.
Yeah,
I got
okay.
the deal was done
before he went to jail.
Before he did the plea deal, the deal was.
I mean, Kwame.
Well, let's not get off on Kwame. I just wanted to because this is an automotive
right.
show.
Well, the Saturn thing. Yeah. You know, Roger and Jill Lajack, I mean, they worked, I know because I talked to Jill a lot, they were literally working 21 hours a day on that for 4 months.
Right.
And they had everything.
Well, I don't blame Roger for that.
And the Nissan Renault board at the last second said, you know, why are we doing this?
Yeah. I would have said it long before that if I was the Nissan Renault board. I never understood what the...
Because it's Machiavellian, I
think. But even GM, wouldn't they have said, you know what, we're going to end up competing against a brand that we started once we sell it.
Yeah, but
I mean, and they get product from elsewhere. You're talking about some of the best dealers in this country.
No, I agree totally, Gene. But, it was the task force who said, you're going to shut this down. Yeah. And if you're going to shut it down, why not get some money for it?
Right.
I mean, if you're being told get rid of it, at least get some money for it.
It's still baffling to me, and I mean baffling, why one of the Chinese automakers that definitely has their eyes on the U.S. wouldn't come in for a first-class dealer network like Saturn and co-brand whatever their brand is, whether it's Brilliance or BYD, and co-brand these things, Saturn, BYD, at least to...
David, let me just stop you right there.
Yeah.
You are brilliant because we reported today that Brilliance is actually buying Saturn stores.
Oh, okay. Very good.
That just came out today that Brilliance Automotive is trying to pick up Saturn stores. They, in fact, Brilliance claims they're going to be in the U.S. market next year.
Well, I'm surprised that it's Brilliance because I talked to those people at this year's Detroit Auto Show, and I put it to them. I'm like, I literally said to them, to the guys, I'm baffled that you're not going to do this deal. I mean, why would you want to start from scratch? And they gave me all these reasons, you know, why they didn't want, you know, blah, blah, blah. The only thing I can say, and I think it was one of the things that undid the deal with Roger, right, was that there was going to be an untenable gap between the runout of the GM product and the introduction of homologated overseas product. And in that time, they would have had to write checks to the dealers to keep them afloat based on the franchise agreements. And it was too heavy a liability because, you know, when you're trying to homologate vehicles from overseas, you think you know how long it's going to take, but you don't really know because of all the things that can go wrong. And so, I mean, Roger could have been writing checks to dealers for a year, you know, to cover their losses.
I still like my idea with Hyundai taking the new car and going to the best Saturn stores and saying, you are going to be our new dealer network for the
Equus.
The Equus.
Yeah.
And
that is a great idea.
Funny. They weren't listening.
I don't get it. I don't think they could.
I don't think
the dealer agreement to let them do that.
Well, unless they start another brand.
Unless they didn't. And even then, I mean, that's one of the reasons.
Who's going to stop them? The Saturn dealers are going out of business.
No, the Hyundai dealers.
Because that's one of the reasons Daimler did the deal with Penske, because doing it that way meant, because if they did it through Mercedes-Benz North America, all those dealers would have the right to get the product, and then there'd be all kinds of litigation if they didn't get it. That's why that was one of the, because doing the deal with Penske meant that they could put a line around it. And I think that would be too complicated with Hyundai, you know.
Well, we'd have to have someone from Hyundai on Autoline and put it to them.
We need to get somebody from Hyundai on.
Maybe in L.A.
Maybe. Gene, AdAge made some news this week. You guys named Hyundai as what, the marketer of the year, advertiser of the year?
That includes all kinds of companies, auto and non-auto.
See, and that's what caught my attention.
This was not everyone else. Yeah,
yeah, they beat Apple. They beat everybody. Why did you guys choose Hyundai?
Voters to our website at edh.com voted, and 40% of the ones that voted picked Hyundai. Voted for Hyundai.
And then they were, Hyundai have a marketing campaign?
not that I know of. You mean to get the vote out?
To rig the vote, right? Why not?
Maybe it's that more Ad Age readers are Hyundai drivers than iPod users.
Yeah, right.
But what do you think with their decision? With your voters, your readers' decision of having voted for Hyundai.
This year in automotive, first of all, to eke out any kind of an increase in sales over last year is a miracle almost. Mm-hmm. And just their marketing messages all through the year and the way that they've come out gangbusters in a year when everybody else is retreating is just amazing, really.
I want to point out two things about the Hyundai story, which I think are fascinating. One, they got Marketer of the Year in a year when they fired their agencies and took it all in-house. They took their advertising in-house, too. And a shout-out to Jim Sanfilippo, mm-hmm. who we know, who worked...
But he's doing Kia, isn't he?
Hyundai and Kia.
For the combined agency, media. Which is Inotion. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's called like Inotion. A liaison on
right.
Kia. Yeah. They don't have that.
Right, he has something to do with that. But secondly, part of the reason they got, and I was writing about this when I was still at Business Week, it's not just the marketing messages. Hyundai's had a brilliant media plan. And I think that was, for example, CNN had, even though their ratings are down now, during the election cycle, their ratings were way up because CNN gets ratings when stuff like elections and disasters are gone, right? Well, their media team, I thought this was utterly brilliant. They negotiated these media buys so that when you're watching CNN, watching Obama's acceptance speech at the convention, the first ad out of the speech, Hyundai. His acceptance on election night in the speech in Lincoln Park, first ad out of his speech, Hyundai ad. They also, first ads out of Palin's speech, McCain's speech at the conventions, they got these very high viewership moments, you know, the water cooler moments of America, they were the first ad you saw coming out of it. And I thought it was really smart media brand.
And they took over GM's spot in the Oscars as auto advertiser.
And the Super Bowl.
And the Super Bowl.
Two or three ads in
huge.
The Super Bowl, yeah.
And the Again, this year they'll be the auto sponsor of the pregame show, which is the 30 minutes before. And this year they had the spot right before kickoff, which is basically like in-game, in addition to in-game. Yeah, it's big, lots of eyeballs.
Right. Joe Uwanek is the head of marketing at Hyundai. He's a really smart guy, former agency guy, but just really good instincts. And he's kind of the architect of this.
Well, the bottom line, though, is they couldn't do it if the product wasn't there. And they have ramped up their product. They've hired better designers. They've upped their quality.
Quality's better.
Each new vehicle they bring to market seems to be, you know, better than the one before. And, you know, they're on upswing. And Toyota and Honda in this country are extremely worried about Honda.
As they should be.
And they should be.
I mean, other companies, you know, you see their, you know, their stuff. GM was, you know, worried about Hyundai before. I know Jim Farley was on the record, you know, complimenting them on the things that they were doing. But John Krafcik, head of Hyundai, he's been obsessed, and it's paying off, right, for the last 6 or 7 years, on all of the interior, you know, the ride, the suspension, the interior packaging. Nothing is going to go wrong on these. And, you know, even the vehicles that haven't caught on, like the Veracruz and the Azera, okay, these are like, they haven't really caught on so well. I think they were maybe a reach, you know, for what the brand would support. Tell me what's wrong with the Veracruz. I mean, it's expensive if you load it up, but as a vehicle, performance, I mean, it's...
But they launched it last year when
Yeah,
it was just the wrong vehicle.
It's one SUV, too many. They've got
Santa Fe,
Tucson. And the Tucson and the Veracruz,
right.
And it's one too many. And
when people are downsizing, maybe too.
Yeah, it's just one too many.
Right, but in terms of the execution, though,
there's nothing wrong with the vehicle.
Absolutely right. Nothing wrong. It's spot on.
They're just now getting into driving dynamics and feel. Again, the design thing, which is going to be the ultimate initial product differentiator going forward.
Right.
They're starting to really appreciate that. They're hiring the right people. So be a formidable competitor for
and
a long
Genesis,
time.
The Genesis is a... There's not much wrong with the Genesis either.
Really. No, it's a packaging, another packaging wonder.
Good car. Really good car. Yeah. Hey, Gene, looking at ad agency business here, Chrysler's getting rid of BBDO, it sure looks like, right?
Well, they have given them their notice, unless there's some 11th-hour deal where they actually can renew their contract. Come late January, the BBDO office of Detroit, BBDO Detroit office will be closed, which is a very sad chapter for this town, for the business. And those personal lives, like 500 people, and not really their own fault, I don't believe. You know, they really. I did a story this week about how when they were called to the meeting a week ago, Monday, and told that the office was going to close. They were told on Monday afternoon offsite, and then told to take the rest of the day off. More than 80% of them went back to work.
Wow,
that says a lot about
their work ethic.
Their work ethic, exactly.
Yeah, no kidding.
No question.
That's one of my alma maters, so BBDO.
No kidding.
It's the bad thing, outside of this town, this business, people watch this show. At one point, the Detroit ad community was quite impressive, quite large, and it has slowly but surely been eroding and... Of course, the auto companies cut the fees that the agencies got, but the reality for these people at BBDO, very few of them will be able to get jobs in this town because there are no ad jobs, certainly not to the scale of almost 500 people. So it's terrible, really.
Have you guys seen some of the new ads that Chrysler's come out with? I Am Ram and Chrysler 300 ads.
We talked about that. My tank is full.
Right.
My head hurts.
Actually, I saw it.
Not BBDO. That is not BBDO.
No. That was going to be one of my questions.
The 300 ad that's been out
is BBDO.
Is BBDO, right.
The Richards Group did the Ram. Actually, Richards is the voiceover.
Right. You know what's interesting about that? I thought Texas, as you know, that's pickup country. That's ground zero for pickup country, right?
Absolutely.
The Richards Group... is based in Dallas.
Yep.
It's a very good agency. I've known Stan Richards, a long time. And I thought that the ad was so un-pickup, like what you'd expect. If you think about, Like a Rock, if you think about, even stuff, Ford has done, which lately has been very, what I would call very rational, kind of oriented stuff. And then this comes out of sort of left field, and, I don't know, it's almost, we were talking about Texas earlier in Austin. To me, it was almost something I'd expect to come out of Austin rather than Dallas, because Austin is like the Ann Arbor of Texas. It's just very...
More emotional, definitely.
And I think that's what Ram actually needs to do, because they're splitting Ram off, as we know, as a new brand, because they didn't have enough, apparently, enough brands. And so they're bringing these, probably over time, bring these Italian commercial vehicles into the Ram franchise. But, so they're trying to make this a different sort of thing. Advertising is very subjective. Maybe it will work. Maybe this is going to be a smart way to go. Only time, tells. But
the commercial looks like, Chrysler called people up to Auburn Hills to pitch the business. It looks like an anthem Ram Anthem. It's not even like completed. What's on the air now, it doesn't even look finished. It looks like this is what they presented to say, this is what we believe is the future direction of this brand.
Yeah.
And then they just said, let's run it. We don't have time right. to
well, when
or
we,
money to fix it up and polish it up. It's very rough. There's yeah. lots of it that are very
it's
rough looking.
It's stock photography.
I personally like it.
Right.
And
it's
when we went out there, that big giant death
the,
march
the
of a meeting.
Death march, yeah. right.
I mean, this is Fred Diaz, yeah.
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 You know, he gets up there, and, you know, what he did was would have been perfect if we were at a dealer meeting in Las Vegas.
That's what you said in your column.
Yeah, well, no, because it was, because I've been at them. I've, you know, worked on them. I had to sit through them and had to watch my advertising be presented at him and just wince, you know. But, I mean, he gets up there, and here are all these analysts, media, and he goes up there, and it's like a dealer meeting. It was just like, no, no, stop. Don't do this. Then he showed the thing, the spot, and and then when it ended up on the air, I was just like, well, wait a minute. I thought that it's almost like the animatic got on
it
the
was,
air.
It was very rough.
They don't call them animatics. They're rip-a-matics, whatever.
Right, right. But that's what I say. It was stock photography with a voiceover. I mean, the production budget for that, you know, was like, you know, zip. But I think that...
well, let's talk about...
I think that Gene got it right. I think that they showed this in the meeting, and they were like... That's our ad. That's Let's it put works. It on. So
okay. Well,
but here's, you know, it's funny, but when you mentioned that Joel Iwanek from Hyundai, who's the VP of marketing there, worked at Richards, this agency that did the Ram work. I mean, I think it's really important for the car companies to take a look at this, because I've seen it over my career. When you have someone from an ad agency go into the car companies and run marketing, it immediately improves. You probably could come up with examples too. It's just it's a profession, you know, that people get. You can't put a guy from sales in there. You can't put a finance guy in there. I don't think you should have a designer in there, because you wouldn't take a finance guy and make him, you know, you wouldn't take a stylist and say, you know, here, you be the finance guy. Why is it okay to take one of those people and stick them in the marketing job?
Well, I've been writing about this for years.
It's
when I first started doing
Get
Outstreams, because I saw it. I was in a meeting when I was at working on Chrysler, and this guy was brought in. I forget where he was from. And, you know, we're taking him through our advertising, and he finishes up the meeting and says, well, you know, I watch a lot of TV, so...
Mm-hmm. I'm an expert.
I know what good advertising is. Okay, we're good.
That is the trouble with advertising, because, right, if you bring the finance guy and the sales guy and the engineer, somebody else in it, right, it's not like all the people in the room are going to have a strong opinion on gear ratios, right? Okay, because...
Right.
But man, everybody's got an opinion on advertising.
Oh yeah,
they watch Mad Men.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, you know, back when I was doing it for all those years, that was my biggest beef: is people who weren't qualified, had no business making multi-million dollar decisions on advertising, and it was painful to watch. Painful to be on the other end of it.
So could use someone like that, or more people. They have a couple.
Well, what do you think is happening at Cadillac? Cadillac's down to three agencies now that it's going to pick?
Agencies that are pitching for the business.
So what are they,
Bartle-Bogle,
Hegarty.
Publicis New York,
and the Martin
agency. Now, it's interesting that all three of them, two of them are with one holding company that already has a big chunk of GM's business via Leo Burnett. And that group, that corporate Publicis Group A, also has the media, all of the media buying and planning. And then Martin, which is in Richmond, Virginia,
is an
IPG umbrella company, which is part of McCann and Campbell Ewald under the same umbrella. So they I don't know if it's a coincidence that they went with three agencies that are either in one of the other big corporate camps that they're already doing business with agency-wise.
What do you guys think of Cadillac's current advertising, and is it worth brooming out that agency to bring in a new one?
I don't blame the agency.
Yeah. The stuff that I've seen, the recent stuff, like there's an ad... that has the CTS and the CTS wagon, I think, and the SRX. Right.
Across the desert, like a blast off.
Like a blast off, and it's sort of, you know, it's meant to project the new Cadillac product into sort of, you know, space age kind of
And performance.
And
I think it's gone for performance.
You know, it feels a familiar to me, and I think, to me, Cadillac, the whole thing with Cadillac to me is you've seen these brand perception maps, right? Okay, so you got a point on the map. It's a piece of paper divided into four, and you get these points where, you know, Cadillac is over here somewhere, probably with, help me out with some other brands and other industries where it might be. But they want to get it over to brands like on this perception map with BMW, Apple, BlackBerry, you know, Nokia, and brands that are they need to, because the product you've driven, we've driven the product, the CTS, the SRX, the wagon. These are spot on competitive with German and Asian cars. They give up nothing in comparison, in my opinion. So it's all about making people think about this brand differently.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of things with this whole Cadillac thing. They have been working on the reinvention of Cadillac for, this is their 10th year now.
Yeah.
And it's just starting to really gel, which another reason that I winced when the Italians said, oh, Chrysler's going to be like, right up here by 2014-15. Oh. Yeah. Please. I mean, Cadillac has worked very hard, and we're just now starting to see it.
Starting to click a little bit.
And as in another aside, Modernista did the Cadillac work. Now, for the viewers out there, Modernista did the Hummer intro work, which creatively was some of the best work done in the automotive advertising field in the last decade. They did a spot called To the Who Music Happy Jack for the H2, which was a brilliant spot, still one of my favorites. Then Modernista, the deck chairs got rearranged and Modernista was handed Cadillac. They did one ad that resonated with the people, and that was with the
Kate Walsh, ran for over a year.
I know, it
just wore you down. It's like enough already.
Enough already.
I mean, and it ran from February 08
right.
until just maybe this early fall. It was like, please.
Yeah, it was,
please,
you know,
something different.
Modernista did a great job on Hummer. I thought they really did.
Isn't
I mean,
Liz Van Zura?
Yeah, she's gone to that from GM. Yeah.
Remember the ad with the soapbox derby ad?
Yeah, I love that.
That's right. That was Modernista.
That's what I was just saying. Happy Jack.
That was great ad.
But, you know, less so for Cadillac, and their print on Cadillac was just horrible. They're not a print agent. They don't do good print, in my estimation. But so that's kind of inside baseball. But getting back to Chrysler saying, well, we're going to be right there with BMW, Cadillac, that's where we're going, and we're going to do it, 2014.
Well, remember, that was Peter Fong
and
who had his head handed to him for going to the media.
But they didn't back off of it at our big meeting, though. They still were making pronouncements like, "We're that's where we're going, and we're going to get there quick." Cadillac's worked diligently for a long time. It takes a long time.
This is not so inside baseball. I have an opinion on the Cadillac thing, which has, it may seem like a small thing, but every time I've talked to somebody over there, they're very big on, you know, restoring the Cadillac script, you know, the script logo.
Which ruined their print,
right? And the other thing is the wreath, okay? Mm-hmm. The Cadillac wreath. And I have this pet theory idea that script and the wreath, as big as they play it, both in advertising and on the steering wheel, and
Ben, you're the man.
Right? And on the steering wheel, that I find the script Cadillac and the wreath to be really old-fashioned looking, like stuff that from an automotive museum. And I just have this pet theory, this pet idea that one of the things they should do is really modernize the look of the graphics. And maybe they'll do that in this process. I don't know. But I just think that they're never going to get out of that average age of 64 thing until they at least start to address some of this, just the way the brand looks and the way it sounds. And
you're shaking your head, Gene. You don't agree, do you?
Well, I mean, no, if they're so focused on the logo and the script, the way it looks and keeping the old thing, I mean, it's like that's looking at your belly button. Just move on. You know, I mean, that's not, to me, the script it's not really that important. It's another way to, how are you portraying your products? And they do have the products. It's just, if you're going to move the needle, it's not going to be because of the script.
I happen to be a big believer in the subliminal, and I think that script and the Cadillac wreath just leaves people with an impression that it's an old brand, it's an old-fashioned brand. I mean, when you look, there's nothing about BMW's graphics when you're looking at that in the middle of your steering wheel that says old or old-fashioned to you. Nothing. Same for Lexus, same for Acura, same for Mercedes-Benz. That star is timeless. And I think this Cadillac script and the wreath, it all looks like 1956 to me.
Well, although, a whole segment of people really dug that big wreath, the bigger the better, on those Escalades.
On the Escalades, they loved it, right.
And you know what? On Escalade, I might leave it alone. But in the other products and stuff, I deal with it differently.
Well, let's get Brian Nesbitt on the show. Let's ask him
how do you like the new Cadillac, Chrysler logo? Have you seen it?
I have seen it, and I do actually like it.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Because I always thought that the one that's... they're using right now had the look of a Pabst Blue Ribbon kind of logo to it. And I know that goes back to the 1930s, and all they did was resurrect this old look. But I think the new graphic is cleaner and more modern looking. I liked it.
Heritage is a funny thing, I'm telling you, when it comes to a car brand. It really is. It can work for you and it can work against you.
By the way, Pabst is
that's right, it's a resurgence.
Is a resurgence.
Yeah.
I just read that. This is kind of like cool.
Here we got the current logo up on the screen right now that you can take a look at. And it's kind of busy, whereas the new one, I think, is far cleaner. But if you look at something like the Ford Blue Oval with the Ford name script.
Classic.
It's changed ever so slightly over 100 years, barely anything at all. And I'm still one who says, if you nail it with the product, and I agree totally, you've got to do great marketing and advertising too. But if you nail it with the product and price it right, it'll pull everything else along with it pretty much.
And, these new the jump off for these agencies is the CTS Coupe, which is a sensational product. Yeah. So if they screw that up, then there's no hope.
And then there's no hope, right.
I'm hoping they don't drop that ball because that's such a beautiful car.
These are some strong, I will say, even though they're part of, these are some strong agencies, creative agencies that are pitching for Cadillac. I mean, the Martin Agency has done Geico. I mean, they've made that auto insurance company into the most ubiquitous thing in their category.
Their ads are pretty clever,
clever. They're doing Walmart now, and they've actually moved the needle on Walmart.
They had car account before.
Sure, Saab and Maserati.
Saab and some of their people actually had worked on Mercedes back in the 90s when I was working on Mercedes. But the Saab stuff was pretty unremarkable. I mean, but again, it was part of the old GM, sort of ad machine. I mean, we haven't talked too much, but I think the system that Bob Lutz has put in with GM is, if you'd asked me a year ago that GM was going to be setting a trend or an example in advertising, I'd have said you were crazy. But the system that Lutz has now, where it's a pot of money, and design and communications and marketing are at the table together, fighting over the same pot of money, and the best idea wins, I love that.
Yeah.
Do you think, Peter, then?
Well, if it works, but they still have too many layers.
I agree.
They have too many
What do you mean, too many layers?
They've got too many sous chefs down there. I mean, Bob's the guy, but they've got a whole bunch of peripheral guys that are fairly senior, that are impacting and inputting in these decisions, and I don't think it's a good way to go.
Yeah, and that's how you see it.
And I know that's how it works on the ad side too. They have too many levels of managers and you had Fritz Henderson telling us on day one of the new GM that they were going to be leaner and faster, and on the marketing side anyway, I don't see.
Hey, I'm real disappointed in GM. I mean, we got their third quarter earnings this week on Monday, and as I said on our AutoLine Daily, here's a company that's just come out of bankruptcy. They got rid of tens of thousands of employees, tens of thousands. They got rid of thousands of dealerships. They slashed everybody's pay. They got rid of their retiree health care. They slash and burn and they still lost over $1 billion.
Look at their sales. I mean, where are the revenues coming from?
But their sales went up.
No. But I think
their sales and market share were up.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, though, they still have stuff on the books that they're winding down. That's basically, I think, held back. I mean, they're still winding down Saturn and Pontiac and Opel. And
I'm talking on an operating basis. They lost money.
But those are still ongoing operations.
Yeah, those are special charges. And when they always say, "Hey, you know, we would have made a bunch of money except for these special charges," that's all special charges.
I actually think they should have stayed in bankruptcy longer. I think they came out too quick. I don't think they were ready to come out. I think they were forced to, or maybe there was a lot of pressure. But I think they should have, you know, made a few more key decisions before they came out. Mm-hmm. But
I will say I am very impressed that even though they're getting rid of four brands, last month they increased sales and market share. And to me, that's the only thing that I'm holding on to of saying, hey, these guys could do well in the future. But I was shocked, you know, because Ford reported $1 billion profit. Chrysler claims it's at a break-even standpoint.
Right.
And GM comes out and loses all this money.
Ford did really well in the clunkers thing. I mean, that was part, I could see that coming back in August when I was getting the how they did on clunkers. I said to Pew, I said, the third quarter is going to be big for Ford. I could see it coming, yeah.
But I think that it seems to me that GM may be under pressure to market its more fuel efficient vehicles versus some of the things like the Silverado. We certainly aren't going to see an Escalade commercial. I mean, I know it's not new product, but we're not seeing any of those, and they're probably doing them regionally. But let's face it, they have to sell those to bring the revenues in.
They do,
and you're not really seeing anything pushing those products.
Well, the one thing I'm wondering is, you know, Ford said a key way that it was able to turn a profit is it's now getting $2,700 more in pricing per car than it did before. And what they're really saying is we've chopped our sales incentives by $2,700 per car. And the fact that GM gains sales and market share, I'm wondering if they still have the incentives on, and this is not – and is this a key reason why they were losing money in the third quarter?
Huh.
Well, in Ford's case, they've not only cut incentives, but they've also gotten a lot smarter about featuring cars. So that, I mean, they're selling the most expensive Focuses they've ever sold because they featured them right, and that Sync has been a huge, you know, huge benefit to them across it. Fusion, they're selling. I mean, the transaction prices on Fusion are terrific.
And GM was saying with the new Malibu and was the new CTS, right, that they were getting thousands of dollars more in transaction prices. I don't know what's happened between.
That's true, but
they lost a lot of momentum with the whole buildup in Chapter 11, and then coming out. I mean, that was July. That was July 10th.
I mean, when's the last time GM made money in the North American market? 10, 12 years ago.
I think it's been closer than that.
More recently, years ago.
Well, probably even more than that. But even when it was making money here, I'm just talking North America. Even when it was making money here, it was at unacceptable profit margin levels compared to what they should be doing and really needed to generate the cash to keep investing in new product.
Yeah. Right. Well, the other thing about those quarters that when they were making, you know, they say, oh, we made $325 million this quarter. Well, on the scale of revenues and operations that GM has, I mean, you can find $300 million in the couch cushions, you know. I mean, you know, so, and then they would report that, and then a couple of quarters later, they'd have a restatement that wiped that out anyway. So it's, you know.
Hey, we ought to get to the rapid fire part of the show. But before we do, Gene, I just wanted to ask you one more thing about advertising. Have you seen this Twilight Saga, the series of movies? There's a new one out called New Moon, and do you know what I'm talking about? No, Volvo is using the XC60 in this. You're not familiar with the movie?
Yeah, I am. First of all, it's the biggest phenomenon since. They don't even know if it equates. They're equating to Star Wars, the popularity. It's a frenzy right now.
Right.
The first movie made something like $400 million, and now the new one is it's starting to be shown late tonight at midnight, and it's just the biggest, hottest thing. And you're right, Volvo's
got the XC60 product placed into this movie, and Ben brought this to my attention, and I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, I don't think it'll do anything for Volvo.
I was going to say.
Well, that was the question.
I mean, because
it's not like the Italian job where car was
but
integral.
But the other thing, you get this right, this huge cultural phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
And you match it up with the XC60, which is a fine car. It really is.
But I think it's lost on the frenzy. The teen queens that are just frothing at the mouth over this movie.
Like, gotta have that XC60.
No, they're not looking at the Volvo. They're looking at the abs of these parade of young studs they've got in this movie, you know.
I mean, the Italian Job Mini thing is still the best product per placement in a movie I think I've
not Herbie seen. The Love Bug?
Not so much.
That was a joke, David.
I know it was.
Let's do rapid fire. Sure. Bren, bring up the graphic.
The Katara ducks.
Oh, dear. And they put them in the crest.
Okay, let's get in here. Oak Cabin 44 says, please ask Peter DeLorenzo what he thinks of the new Buick Regal.
I like it because of where it came from.
It's an Opel Insignia,
Opel Insignia, European Car
of the Year.
I think it's a very nice car.
The only thing is, and I think I know where he's going with this, is it's badge engineering. I mean, if you went to the Buick studio and said, do a Buick of these dimensions, it'd look different than the Insignia does.
Yeah.
Some things never change.
I also think that the Regal name, I know it's a naming thing. But
well, I agree with you. I would not have. Wow. I would have not put Regal name on it.
I mean, the Regal, I mean, who's your target for that? Fred Mertz? I mean, he's been dead for 45 years. I mean, I just...
Why don't you call it the Buick Insignia? I mean, if you're going to do
right.
it.
I mean,
you know, that's not a bad idea at all.
It would have been fine, but they...
They aren't listening, John. They no, just aren't listening.
They are. I've been in these discussions, as you have, Peter. You'd start talking about the money necessary to get a new name.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that.
And it spooks everybody in the room.
Well, it should. I mean, I'm being flippant about it because, you know, to do a new name and to do it properly, these companies don't have that kind of money right now. No, they just don't.
They had that argument on Malibu, that's why it's the Malibu.
Okay, our one-minute warning is binging at us. Okay, Jeff, I'm going to butcher your name here, but I'm not the first one to do it. Jeff Wadchuk says, if GM could only do one large sedan for the U.S. retail market based on the Zeta architecture, which is the same as the Camaro and the G8 and all that, which brand would be better to get it, Buick or Chevrolet? Peter, this one goes to you then. A big rear drive sedan, who should get it, Buick or Chevrolet?
Chevrolet if it's performance tuned.
I agree, just because Chevrolet is a more important brand, and if it's a great product, Chevy should get it instead of Buick.
It should be drop dead gorgeous and be a traffic stopper design wise and a rear wheel drive and plenty of horsepower. And sign me up.
This one I think came in via Twitter for Gene. Any thoughts on the new Subaru Outback campaign? Featuring a skunk and free detergent.
I love it. I think it's great.
Explain the ad a little bit. Give us some background.
It's an animated skunk and there's a fake sort of, cleanser.
Detergent
looks
bottle.
Like a jar of detergent. And it's because the Outback likes to get dirty and the owners like it dirty. And the skunk is there to try to clean things up. And they actually, on their website, you can try to send it. You can send away for a jug of the cleanser. Subaru's doing
very brilliant to me.
Right now.
They don't even know that the economy collapsed. Just sailed right through this, no problem.
And that ad is just dead right on for that brand, their owners, the people who are interested in buying Subarus. So it's very good.
Okay, Bad Nickel wants to know, what's the group thinking of Detroit putting demands on GM to keep the headquarters in town?
That's a political quagmire. by every measure, GM should consolidate in Warren, but it's never going to happen. I mean, they're going to have to keep a presence in Detroit. You know, a reader wrote me today and said, so let me get this straight. I have to drive down and pay the 1.5% tax of the city. But, you know, he wants to go to Warren, but GM's, they're neck deep in that. I don't know how
they're going. Detroit's on life support. If you take GM out of Detroit, you can hang a toe tag on the city.
Yeah,
I mean, really. And so
it's our most visible building. They're stuck.
They own it. They own both buildings.
Well, it's symbolic, but I think that I think the city dies if they leave. Yeah. I really do think that dies.
Okay, Pedro Fernandez wants to know, when the Chinese cars finally arrive, do you suppose they'll undercut the competition to get a foothold in the American market? And who is most likely to take a hit, the imports or domestics or equally both?
Well, simply undercut the competition price-wise, just
because they're Chinese.
Yeah, just because
low cost.
The way they do it. But if they think it's going to be a finger snap and they're going to be where Hyundai is now, it's not going to happen that way.
That's how Hyundai and Kia did it, actually. They underpriced and
then they ran into trouble because they didn't have
the
quality.
And then the products got better over time. Yeah, it's taken them a while to get it right. But, yeah, yes, that's what they'll do. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, who would get hurt? Mitsubishi, which is already hurting.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, some of the
Mitsubishi, Suzuki,
some of the second, third tier,
probably the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I got to tell you, it's going to be it's a heck of a walk for the consumers I know to bypass Honda, Toyota, Hyundai, Nissan, Mazda, on and on and on, to get to BYD or Brilliance. You know, I mean, and when those companies start hiring real talent executives who know the North American market, then I'll open my eyes a little more. Until they start doing that, I'm a skeptic.
Okay, Jeremy Jones from Dallas wants to know, what do we think about the IIHS results, the top safety picks that made Ford look like a hero, even though many of the vehicles were Volvos and Toyota did not get any picks?
I'm not a big fan of the IIHS since they're totally
A front for the insurance industry.
So to those manufacturers, I say don't high five when you get good grades, and don't get down when you don't, because there's just an underlying thread underneath that whole thing that I don't like.
But the general public wouldn't know that. So
no, they don't.
I mean, if they're going to say who's got the best 5-star rating, and they're going to say, wow, you know, I mean, it's
and Ford led, but 4 of the 6 were Volvos, and Ford selling Volvo. But you're right, people don't read
people
into
don't.
It that much.
I think that may have been what Jeremy Jones was getting at.
Yeah.
The media said, oh, Ford got 6 picks, and, you know, I go to their site and I go, oh, 4 of them are Volvos.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and as one of my guys here, Craig Cole, pointed out, yeah, the 2 Fords that did get on there were based on Volvo architecture.
Oops.
So let's see. This is still Jeremy Jones, another one. He says, I've never seen a Chinese car up close, so I'm curious about things like panel gaps, et cetera. All over the map, Jeremy. over the map. Some, and it varies by car maker to car maker. We've seen some stuff that, you know, you could take out your loose chain and pour it down the gaps in the body, and other stuff that looks pretty good. I mean, look, the Chinese are going to figure this stuff out. It's not a mystery. The Japanese did it 40 years ago. The Koreans have done it in the last 20 years. Now it's the time for the Chinese to step up and do it. They'll do it.
And they've got all the joint ventures with automakers in China, so they're learning a lot. They're learning tons.
Then the big gong will go off, and they'll say, "Okay, you guys are
out." I know that.
And now we're coming.
You know, this business is all about execution. You could put all the smart people in the room, but the Chinese executives that I've met and interviewed, I haven't met the guy yet who I thought was going to put together the right team to execute the right car for this market. I haven't met them yet. So until I meet them,
we're a decade away.
At least.
Right. For any meaningful.
Yeah. Although I'd say keep an eye on BYD, because it could be the one that really, even though we've talked about EVs being a small niche, here's a chance for an upstart to grab a big chunk of that niche. So I'd just say keep a look on that. Pedro Craig from Facebook asks, why doesn't Cadillac have, or do they have, a large sedan on a rear drive platform coming out?
Yes, they do. but it's going to be a
all-wheel
rear
drive.
All-wheel.
All-wheel drive with a bias towards the rear, but they have a large sedan coming out.
And it's quite handsome.
Right.
It looks spectacular.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm sick. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like little cars. I like driving little cars. But
give me a big Cadillac.
Yeah,
I mean, come on. You know, where's the big Cadillac? I mean, Americans like big Cadillacs.
And it'll be great when it displaces the DTS. And
yeah, but it's John's right. It's spectacular looking.
I mean, you know, not only do we need big cars, we still need, there are still buyers, and I appreciate a nice floaty ride. And, you know, we let the enthusiast media, of which I plead guilty to be one of them, really dictate what we think everybody should be driving. And I tell you, you get in a big floaty sedan, and it's so comfortable.
Yeah.
I just really like it.
Well, you know, I had a DTS, believe it or not.
Really?
I had a 2-year lease on a DTS, and, you know, it was...
It's
I liked
the last
it. It was fine.
Of the big, great sedan.
Yeah.
And I hope that doesn't go away.
I confess this is going back a little ways, but I remember getting the Fleetwood as a press car, and I liked it for a week anyway. And I was in my 30s when I...
Okay, Julian Garcia Irizar asks, as Ford and Lincoln products are improving in appeal, what's going on with Mercury?
Nothing. I mean, do they have new product? They don't really have anything coming.
No. So.
They have nothing unique, right? I mean, isn't everything still it's just still, rebadged Ford?
Right, and my belief is that they're going to, that at least for the short to medium term, that's the way it's going to stay. I mean, they're going to have, you know, Mercury's are still going to be Ford Plus, and it's going to be to help the Lincoln dealers with sales volume. So, I mean, longer term, there's a lot of chatter in the system about Ford going to one channel with Ford and Lincoln. But that's,
they have in Canada.
Yeah, but I think that's a ways off. If that's true, I think that's a ways off to execute for all the franchise laws that we're very familiar with. So,
okay, Scotty in Cleveland wants to know, have there been any further plans for the GMC Denali concept, or has that been dropped? I don't know.
I haven't heard anything more about it.
Okay. Do you fellows believe, and fellas too, that the new sales figures indicate a permanent move towards smaller vehicles and that Chrysler is doomed?
Two separate questions.
Two separate questions, right.
Yeah, I think there's a shift to a little smaller vehicles. You'll see it accelerate again if we go to $4 a gallon gasoline. But I think generally people are looking at it a little differently and are a little open to shopping a little smaller vehicle. But a wholesale shift, I don't know. We like big cars, big vehicles in this country, so it's going to be a while.
This is a pet peeve of mine about this discussion. I think there's been so much focus on the B car segment that I think the shift over time, which is substantial and meaningful in terms of fuel economy and oil consumption, is just there's a lot fewer SUV buyers that are going to be out there, and those people are trending smaller. And smaller to them is the C segment, the Fusions and the Corollas and the bigger Focus. And so it's not all about little cars, because it's just there is a trend towards people who were buying big in the last 15 years going smaller, not necessarily small, but smaller. And I think that's here to stay.
As for Chrysler?
Yeah.
Everything would have to go perfectly right for them in every single situation. The economy will have to turn around dramatically, and everything would have to fall into place, and I'm still not sure they're going to make it.
I think that they can make it, but I would agree with you. The market has got to keep growing. And even with that, it's going to be tough. I think we'll get a much clearer idea of what's happening with Chrysler when we see November sales, because at least they're starting to get back into doing some advertising right now. I think you mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, they were out of advertising
they were out of it,
for
but,
a
I mean,
long
look
time.
Look where they're taking Jeep. They gave at the all-day march, death march, that meeting where they want to take Jeep, which, I mean, we understand why they want to expand their buyers to because most people don't go off-road, but what is the essence of Jeep?
They've walked away from that. They better get back on that in a hurry.
It's a shame for Jeep, really. Yeah.
The problem, the challenge, I should say, with them is that the new generation of product isn't really going to start rolling in for another 2 years, and that's a long time to tread water with what you've got.
The dealers are dying now. I mean, they are on the ropes. And they've got 2 years.
I like what I've seen that's coming. I mean, I think it's all really strong. I think the 500 is going to surprise people, but who knows how much money that will actually, profit that will actually generate. But it's you know, they just don't have them. They've got a new 300 coming and a new Avenger, right, as part of the deal.
Charger
in the next 24 months. But... you know, and they look good. They really look good.
The new Grand Cherokee looks spectacular.
I just wish they would have dialed back their pronouncements. We're going to sell this many.
Yeah.
Well, that's what nobody believes. Nobody believes their market share projections.
And we're going to have, this percentage of the market. It's just like, you know.
Yeah.
I wish them the best because a lot of people depend on their success. But they help themselves a lot by dialing back the expectations and just showing us, you know, meaningful progress along the way. That'd be a better way to do it.
Marchione is—he's demonstrated he's a smart, decisive guy. He's probably the right guy to try to make this happen. So it's a bit of, you know, but it's a challenge, no question. It's a huge challenge.
The only reason any of us are paying any attention to Sergio Marchione at all is because he pulled off an amazing turnaround at Fiat. Mm-hmm. If he hadn't have done that, none of us would have given them 2 cents at all, you know. No chance of survival or making it whatsoever. But because this guy took this basket case of a company called Fiat and fixed it, mm-hmm. That's the only reason why we're paying attention to him.
Yeah.
Well, look, we're at the top of the hour here. We ought to wrap things up. Before we completely do, I should say, been great doing these podcast awards. A lot of you voted for us to get us nominated for the podcast awards. Please go to podcastawards.com, scroll down to the business section, look for Out of Line Daily, and please vote for us because we'd like to get that award. Also, next week, there will not be an Out of Line After Hours. It's going to be Thanksgiving, and everybody should be...
I didn't get that memo.
Well, good. Now you know not to show up.
Right. Well, Thanksgiving's my favorite holiday of the entire year. You know, it's all non-denominational. You don't have to go buy presents. You don't have to bake cakes.
It's too bad we're not going to be on, because 7 o'clock on Thanksgiving is that you basically, you're falling asleep from the tryptophan and the turkey on the couch, and you want to fire up a live cast.
Well,
I
know, but I'm going to be lazed out on the couch myself. You know, I don't want to come in and have to work that night. And then the week after that, we're actually going to the L.A. Auto Show, and we'll be doing this show live from L.A. But anyway, Peter, great having you here, as always.
Good to be here, as always.
Gene, great having you. Great discussion. David, great having you here as well, and we'll be back at this in another 2 weeks.
Visit our website, outoflinedetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Out of Line Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Out of Line Detroit. That's all there and much more at outoflinedetroit.tv. Orange, purple.